It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios, located at the Golden Nugget Lake Charles. Here's Del Olalea.
When the world was the time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin. Theodore, breathe in, breathe out, me and more, breathe in, breathe out, never mind, it was time, number nine, let my lies, feline, with a death wish, be right, didn't help, no name on the guest list, hold on, we're destined.
The riffraff is cleared out, thankfully. John and Lance Dunn, they're on their way back to Houston. But we still got 2 hours here at the Gold Nugget. We're in the DraftKings Sportsbook. At least I am. Kind of empty. All the TVs are on, but it's just a big old sportsbook with no one here. But we'll get you to 12, and then Rich Eisen will follow us. Watching the game last night, and that being the Rockets game, I came to the conclusion that the Rockets aren't good at all the things you need to be good at to close out a game, at least when Kevin Durant's not around. He missed his first game due to injury this season. He sprained his ankle. We'll see how long he's out for. He had missed two games prior due to personal reasons, and personal reasons has become, at least around this time of the year, the way you say but don't say that a player's on the trade block. James Harden's missing games for personal reasons now. We'll get into that in a bit, but sticking with the Rockets, they win the game. That's the most important part. They beat a bad Pacers team, and it was a game where the Pacers, right before the half, were up by six, and you're asking, what the hell is going on? The Rockets put on a run and wind up by seven going into halftime. There was a three that was ruled, maybe Naismith knocked down a three that was ruled too late, so instead of being up by four, they're up by seven, and you think, okay, order's restored, you made a push at the end of the second quarter, nice way to close out the half, and okay, maybe this one they'll take control of, and it won't be so nerve-wracking. Instead, they have a bad third quarter, and the game comes down to the final minutes, where they win 118-114. Alpi, the day after, he doesn't, at least the game after, we find out he's not making the All-Star team. He has a great one up until the final, three to four minutes of the game, where he committed two turnovers that led to runouts for the Pacers. And also, he missed two free throws that, if not for the Rockets' ability to offensive rebound, would have given the Pacers a real shot to tie the game. Offensive rebound winds up in Amin's hands. He makes one out of two, puts the game away. So they win 118-114, but the problems continue. They couldn't inbound the ball. They got lucky that it wound up still their ball. And, of course, the free throw shooting, when you miss three out of your last four, it's a problem. And when Alperen Şengün has to be your primary ball handler on a night, at least late, because you're playing through him, and sometimes you're playing through Amin, but you're playing through him and you don't have a point guard, you don't have Kevin Durant, you're going to get nights like last night where, of course, Alperen Şengün can be a hub at times, but he should not be your primary ball handler when guys are actually trying to get at the basketball. We saw the pressure that Naismith put on Amin Thompson. Amin's handle's not great, but he does have the ability, because of his athleticism, to get to the bucket, but it wasn't pick and roll. I don't know if you wanted to bring a second defender to Amin in that situation. Just let him go one-on-one. He got to the bucket a couple times, so that certainly can be an answer when it's winning time and the opponent is trying to pressure you into turnovers. But it just feels unsteady. As talented as they are, there's leakage with this Rockets team, and it begs the question whether they're going to try to fix some of that, whether it be through a starting point guard that they trade for or even a backup that Ime believes in, because you see by the rotations that there are times, and I guess it just depends on the night, that he doesn't believe in any of his what you would call guards or point guard type guys to go in there. Why, like Aaron Holiday, who has gained minutes throughout the season depending on the injuries or just the play or the flow of the game will wind up playing or sometimes not. But Aaron Holiday wasn't a guy he leaned on in that late stretch, and he's a point guard. And, of course, the one we're all waiting for is for him to fully trust Reed Sheppard to be a guy that can handle late-game situations. It's not him. So what are you going to do? We know this team will be in these situations in the playoffs, and will it be strictly a Kevin Durant thing, who we've seen him turn the ball over in pick-and-roll situations when you bring a second defender up. So who are they going to lean on? I don't know that they have an answer. And I've taken the approach this season that it's all about the final product as far as what they are when the playoffs begin. But at the moment, the questions remain. Who are they going to be late? And this is a Pacers team. The Pacers are bad. They have decided, because they've been forced to be bad. I mean, they play hard. They still have, when Haliburton's around, they have this style of play that's frenetic on offense, and we saw what it did in the playoffs last year. They made it all the way to a Game 7. But that's not the team that the Rockets faced yesterday. It's a bad basketball team who, sure, will try hard. They have the bones of that team. Like, Naismith had moments in the playoffs last year. Of course, Nembhard, maybe not a household name, but people started to remember that name because of what he did. And the likes of Pascal Siakam, who's still a very good player and made the All-Star team. So a lot of those guys are there. But overall, without their engine, Haliburton, they weren't expected to win a lot of games this year, and that's proven to be the case. And yet it took everything the Rockets had to find a way to eventually put them away. So that has kind of been the state of things for this team. Good team, bad team, doesn't really matter. It always feels like you're gonna wind up in a clutch game. And the question will just be, can the Rockets find enough answers on offense and enough offensive rebounds to win the game? So Sean is the host of Rocket Power. He does that show with Joe George. You'll be able to hear it on Friday here on ESPN 97.5. As you watch this team over what now is, 48 games, do you see the same problems that emerge early continuing? Have you seen any answers to any of these problems of, well, let's say the last month and a half or so?
Definitely not last night. Last night, once it was 75-71 in the third quarter, the Rockets push in the first half and then kind of, and you know, gain add to the lead in the third quarter. And once the Pacers started getting back into it, I was like, all right, I know how this is going. This is just going to be a tight game the entire game for as long as we're going to be here. So, yeah, no, I mean, I thought last night they did a good job of knowing what the referees were going to call, which was everything.
Yep.
If you drive to the basket and throw up a contested shot, they'll just give you a call. And the Pacers should have done it more. They were getting the same calls the Rockets were. Just the Rockets were more committed to, and some of that is just they're throwing to Şengün every time. But yeah, no, I mean, this was just another a January Rockets game that we had the pleasure of watching on February 2nd. It's the same thing we've seen basically for the last month.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I wanted some growth. I don't know where the answers would have come from. I was just hoping to find them, and they're always, it feels like, teetering on the edge of it going poorly. But they are so talented that they can find ways. And I mentioned Ahmed Thompson, as you said, he got to the bucket, and when he wasn't finishing, he certainly got fouled enough. At least particularly late. He got fouled, I think, maybe once or twice going to the rim. But he didn't have a good shooting night. Alpi himself got to the line 18 times and had a good night shooting free throws until the very end, which he is not a great free throw shooter. So I guess you might say he was due to miss some, because overall he's only a 68.7, just under 70%, and he was shooting at a much higher clip than that until late. So if you're just going by the percentages, we probably should have expected at least one miss. Unfortunately, he missed two, but you did get the offensive rebound, and that solidified your chances with the Amen Thompson make at the very end. So we are just a couple of days away from the trade deadline, and that is certainly a focus of the general sports media because of what happened last night. We'll get into the James Harden stuff. The Rockets have one more game before the deadline. They play that game comes up after the deadline, so they play the Celtics in Houston, so we may know what this Rocket team is going forward. Well, we will know by the deadline, so we'll see if they make a move. But before their next game, we will know if this team, is, as it stands now, is the team we're going to see going into the playoffs, or do they find some way to supplement what I think is a lacking guard rotation? There are some names floating out there that we've talked about, certainly, and Rocket Power has certainly brought up the names on the podcast. A name I did not believe would be on the market, but is, thanks to his own doing, is James Harden. We'll get into that. I'm not suggesting he becomes a Rocket. That seems like pretty far-fetched because James Harden is demanding what he always demands. He's demanding money. And the Clippers did lose last night. James Harden missed another game because of personal reasons. And now the move for him is going to a place that is willing to commit to giving him a 2-year deal. The status of his contract is he does have a no-trade clause because of his time in the league, and he's essentially on a 1-year deal. The next he has a year left after this year, but it's not fully guaranteed. And all it does is mean that he can opt out, and his future team, whoever that might be, has to commit to giving him 2 years, maybe $80 million if they have any interest in trading for him, because he'll veto something, much like Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler didn't have a no trade, but no one wanted Jimmy Butler around if he wasn't happy. So James Harden is in that position this year, and the Clippers and James are working on that. We'll hear from Shams when we come back. Also hear from Alperen. He played aggressively. He was big time through, let's say, the first 44 minutes of the game, and then some mistakes happened late. But we'll hear from him on missing the All-Star game and how that affected his play, or if it affected his play, and what his mindset is going forward as a player, and particularly how he approached last night, because there was no Kevin Durant, who missed it because of a sprained ankle. So if you want to join the show, 713-780-3776. So plenty of basketball. We'll get into some NFL stuff, because Roger Goodell spoke, and it's a continuation. At least we got an answer from him on something a caller brought up yesterday, so we'll get into that. And also, why it is so important that the Seahawks win the Super Bowl, beyond my own personal bias, because I got a prime example of, and I'm actually watching it right now on television, why if the Patriots win the Super Bowl, we are in, and this is going to come in probably 6 or 7 years, we're in for another round of, let's just say, increased Patriots presence in our lives. So we'll get to that as well. We're just going to start here. I'm at the DraftKings Sportsbook at the Golden Nugget in Lake Charles. You've heard John talk about it quite a bit. And I got a question about whether I got a suite, so I'll answer that when we come back. Now that I've officially checked out, and, you know, as soon as the show's over, I'm heading back home. So we'll get to that as well. We'll be back.
ESPN 97.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios, located at the Golden Nugget Lake Charles. Here's Del Olalea.
This is the first time we're talking to you about the All-Stars were announced. How did you learn about the news? What was your reaction? And was there any added motivation for you tonight?
You know, it's my goal after this time, after last year's, to be All-Star every year. You know, it was disappointing for me. It happens, you know, we have a lot of talent in the league, and, you know, I'm still young. I'm going to make it eventually, and it's going to make me just hard work, and, you know, I have still goals. I got to make it, you know, and stuff like this just always push me. It's a good way, you know, I just got to work harder, be disciplined what I'm doing, and, you know, I have hopefully a lot of years in NBA and a lot of All-Stars. I will make it.
Did you want to prove a point today with your performance?
It's not about All-Star. I just got to just prove it myself. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, I haven't had a good month last month, and it's just a new month. You know what I'm saying? I just got to be aggressive. I just got to be remember who I am and how I can dominate every game, you know, and be confident and just go over there and kill it. And that's who I am, and that's what I'm going to do every night I'm playing.
And to be fair, you've battled some ankle issues all season long. You're feeling fully healthy now. How good is that just for your self-confidence that you can go out there every night?
I would say, like, around this time, nobody feel fully healthy, you know, because we have a lot of games, a lot of back-to-backs, you know, a lot of away games. It just makes you tired mental, body-wise, everything, you know. You just got to stay strong, you know, get through until All-Star break, and we have, like, a little 1 week off in that All-Star break this year. Hopefully not anymore. You know, just get a good rest and get ready for the second of the season and, you know, go to playoff in the best spot we can and then go from there.
39 points, 16 rebounds, 5 assists for Alperen Şengün. So he was aggressive, took 25 shots. He was great. He was what you needed on a night when you didn't have Kevin Durant, unfortunately, late. The missed free throws, a couple turnovers, gave the Pacers some life and made it a little closer than we would have liked. But they found a way because they will still, no matter what's going on, they will still offense a rebound, and it gave Amen Thompson a chance to go to the line and knock down one or two. And that ended the Pacers' hopes. So they win 31-17 is their record. They got one more game for the trade deadline. It'll be against the Boston Celtics, who are surprisingly good. Like I don't think anyone thought they'd be as bad as the Pacers, but when Jaylen Brown is now slated to be your best player, there were some real questions about how good that that Celtics team would be, and he is at least be an MVP candidate, and they are third in the East, tied for second with the Knicks. I guess whatever the tiebreaker is goes to the Knicks, so they have the second best record in the Eastern Conference, which I would say to most people is a surprise. So that'll be a good matchup. They'll come to town, and we'll see if the Rockets are the same team that entered Indiana once they step on the floor, because that game will be right after the trade deadline. So I see Eric's on hold. Let's get to him here, and then we'll move on to a former Rocket who's back in the news. What's up, Eric?
Yeah, when it comes to the NBA, the Celtics are doing pretty good because of coaching. I don't know about the Rockets coaching staff, but I have rumblings that KD wants out. And, hindsight's 2020. Do you think they should have made that trade last year for KD for Jalen Green? I mean, Jalen Green had one bad playoff series last year, but I think, I don't know if I'm right, but I think the Rockets were better off last year than they are this year. They were a young team. You see the Rockets trading for a young guard, and the NFL is doing more investigating on the Epstein files in the Trump administration. I'll hang up and listen.
Every time he says he's heard rumblings, we know that's not the case. No one has heard that KD wants out. KD isn't, I guess, what his former teammate is, James Harden, when it comes to these certain things. He didn't even want out of Phoenix. They decided they wanted to trade him because they were desperate to get Jimmy Butler, and no one wanted to take on Bradley Beal. So they had to pick a contract, and they picked KD's. And once they did that, then he said, "Okay, get me out of here." And now that's part of the reason he's here. Did they make a mistake? Their record last year, I checked this like a week ago. They had a better record at a certain point I checked the end of January, and the record last year was better. Are they better equipped to go win a playoff series this year? I would say so, because Kevin Durant's on the roster. Whether that comes to pass, we'll have to wait and see. I don't believe Kevin Durant will be the reason they don't win a series. And if Jalen Green and Dylan Brooks were here, they would. They were better in the backcourt with those two than they are now, and that's partly due to Fred VanVleet not being around. So the Rockets, yes, they fast-forwarded their timeline to trade when they'd made the trade for Kevin Durant. If you want to hold them to hold that decision to the fire, you would say, hey, why didn't you just wait on the eventuality that Giannis would want out, so you'd have the requisite pieces and still have stuff left over? If you want to get after him on that, you're playing the hindsight game. I guess you're more than willing to, because I think everyone saw the Giannis thing coming. It was just a matter of when, particularly when you knew that Dame Lillard tore his ACL or his Achilles? Achilles, was it? So when you knew that was on the table, the Bucks didn't really have any way to turn that roster into one that would compete. Should they have held off and waited for Giannis? That's tough when Kevin Durant's available and it's not costing you pieces that you think are untouchable. So that's something we'll debate depending on how this run goes for them this year. Look, with Kevin Durant, your window with him to win is shorter than it would have been if you kept Jalen and Dylan Brooks around. Dylan Brooks, we've talked about having a really good year in Phoenix, but I have no problem with the trade. Counting on windows and saying and thinking you have an extended amount of time to win is something that's a gamble. Maybe even more so than the Kevin Durant trade, because you've seen already one of your young players is already kind of bucking against his role and what he thinks he can actually do in this league. And Tari Eason, it happens. Young players want bigger roles. They want more opportunities. So how long could you have kept this unit together and happy with their roles? So I'm not surprised. I don't have any problem with the trade. Coaching. You know, Joe Mazzulla was questioned as a coach. His nickname was Second Row Joe because he wasn't even on the first row of coaches for the Celtics. They lost, I guess, Will Hardy to the Jazz while Ime was still there. And then of course, with the issues in Boston with Ime, he was fired or I don't know if it was considered a mutual parting of ways, whatever the description was, he was no longer the Boston Celtics head coach. You know, I think there was another guy on the staff who left to the college ranks, so they kind of fell into Joe Mazzulla. And, of course, that Celtics team was supremely talented. And then Brad Stevens went out and made trades to supplement the two Jays with trading for Jrue Holiday and then bringing in Kristaps Porzingis, and they went on to win a title. Now Joe Mazzulla's, all the questions about him have turned. They've turned from, is he ready for this job, to he's a champion, and now he's doing great things in a year where the Celtics didn't think, at least people outside the Celtics organization didn't think they would have to do very much. And now Ime Udoka, who has been questioned more than he has ever been as a Rockets head coach, because year one was, oh, look at the turnaround. They're actually a real basketball team. Year two, you're the two seed. Year three, you trade for Kevin Durant, and expectations grow. And then anything that was maybe less apparent before or was looked past because you're on the your trajectory is going up, you start, and if you start to see a leveling or a plateauing of your season or your trajectory, people start to look at the coach and go, hey, wait a minute, you've got Kevin Durant, you've got Amin, you got Şengün, you've got a supremely talented roster, why isn't this team better? And if all you hear in your pressers are, we play soft, we got to try harder, we got to be more aggressive, we got to lock it defensively, people don't like hearing that when they think there are some offensive issues. So I don't think Ime is a big problem. He may not be the most astute when it comes to offensive basketball, but the Rockets have a style of play, and despite some of our concerns, they are a top four team in the West who has real aspirations. So look, if it goes poorly again this postseason, the noise will get louder, and by louder I mean it'll just be something that becomes a bigger conversation piece. But I don't think Ime has anything to worry about. He's pretty solidified in that organization, and it was very early, and we kind of know this, although the Rockets aren't ever going to confirm it. The belief is that the player we're going to talk about next was going to be a Rocket until Ime Udoka said, "Nah, I'm good," and that player is James Harden. James Harden wants out of Los Angeles. He does this every couple years, so it shouldn't be a surprise. But the Clippers were surprised because they had been playing such great basketball, and then James hits them with, "If you're not going to pay me, I want out." It is his MO. There are differing reasons why he wants out. He said he wanted out of Houston because he didn't think he had a chance to win. So he did the fat suit thing. He was kind of a malcontent, and then he asked out. He quit in a game. At least people view him quitting in Brooklyn. There's a game in Sacramento where he apparently blatantly didn't try, and that was what led to him getting out of Brooklyn. Once he saw the Kyrie stuff happening, he wanted out of there. And then we know in Philly, it all ended with him calling Daryl Morey a liar, because I think he foresaw, or at least he believed, he was going to get big money from the Sixers, and they weren't so sure about it. And he winds up calling Daryl Morey a liar, and he winds up in L.A. And when the Clippers say, hey, we want to keep our books clear for 2027, we're not looking to give you an extension, which they can't give him now anyway. It would have to be in the offseason due to his contract that he's currently on. He wants out now. And the question will be, what team wants him and what team's going to pay him? The rumor, or at least currently the reporting, is the Cavs are interested. And let's hear from the guy who has reported on this quite a bit over the last, 12 to 18 hours. Let's hear from Shams Charania. He was on ESPN. Here's Shams discussing a potential James Harden trade.
So James Harden, again, when you have a mutual option, you have a small partial guarantee of about $40 million. He's also thinking about, what is my future with the Clippers?
Can I win?
Is there a potential fit somewhere else? And also, is there a path toward competing for a championship? And looking at all the sides, and the Clippers similarly have to make decisions for their future as well. And so this has been, over the last couple of years, I think James Harden's had a really good run there. You hear only positive things for him in L.A. as a leader, as a player. He's been pretty much available throughout his entire stint in L.A. But now, on the eve of the trade deadline, James Harden and the Clippers are evaluating a trade of him out of L.A.
And maybe it makes more sense now that he hasn't played the last two games for the Clippers for personal reasons. There we go.
Sean, we played a game of Do You Believe Him with Paul George when it came to, did he really take something to help his mental health? Let's play another. Let's play the game, Do You Believe James Harden's people, floating to Sean, that this is about winning a championship. Do you believe that the championship aspirations for James Harden are playing even, let's say, a 25% portion of why he wants out of L.A.?
No.
I would agree.
Just no.
Absolutely. I would agree. Yeah, there's no fumfing around. We don't need to wax poetic. The answer is no.
Don't even really need to talk it out. Like, okay, like the Clippers are something like, they're like 17-4 in their last 20-something games.
Yeah.
Like they've played like one of the best teams of basketball since Ty Lue said they need to start playing like one of the best teams of basketball. And yeah, and he won. And it's just, we've seen this move before. He's done the surprise trade demand a week before the deadline before. He did that in Brooklyn. Like, that's just what he does.
This is about cashing out one final time. He may not even think it's one final time, but at least he wants to
cash
the next time. He wants to cash out again. And right now, he does have a suitor. Chris Haynes reported less than 10 minutes ago, the Clippers and Cavs have ramped up conversations on a Harden-Darius Garland package, with both sides motivated to execute a deal relatively soon, league sources tell me. So it looks like he has a landing spot, which would also mean that the Cavs, if we go by what we just talked about, the Cavs have in some way got the message to his people that they are willing to commit to him. And the Cavs are in an interesting spot, too, because they've got a Donovan Mitchell extension on the horizon that they would love for him to commit to. He's already committed to one, which was surprising many, because the thought was he wanted New York, or at least certainly didn't want Cleveland when he was eventually traded there. So the reporting around him is, if the Cavs have another flame out early, he's not going to sign an extension. And I was thinking to myself, don't you have a lot of control over whether you guys flame out or not? Now, he has been a pretty good playoff performer. He puts up big numbers. He's not good defensively, so he kind of gives back what he gives up. But the other Cavs have certainly played a part in their demise more than him. So it's going to be a big postseason run for the likes of maybe now James Harden. Imagine Donovan Mitchell having to depend on James Harden to show up in a playoffs. So good luck with that. But, of course, Evan Mobley, Jared Allen, who's now in trade discussions. People are suggesting that they may trade Jared Allen to get more assets to go after Giannis. But right now, the closest they are to a deal is acquiring James Harden. And whether they can get in on the Giannis sweepstakes probably is dependent on whether Giannis would commit to the Cavs, which is up for debate. We don't know where he wants to wind up as far as a full-on commitment beyond this year and next, which is when his contract is up. So we got trade speculation abound. No surprise that James Harden is looking for more money, and it may lead him to Cleveland. It'll be him and Donovan Mitchell, and I guess Evan Mobley. And we'll see what else the Cavs have on that roster as they're looking to make moves to strengthen a roster that has not performed up to expectations. They did not expect, with the way the East was projected to be a team battling to stay out of the play-in, but there they are. All right, we'll go to break with that. We'll talk some NFL because it was media day, at least day one of media day at the Super Bowl. Roger Goodell spoke. He spoke about several things, from the 18-game schedule, potentially, to the lack of black coaches being hired, and that is something a caller, I believe, called in about yesterday. So we'll give you Roger Goodell's words on that, and I'll talk about why this week cannot end in a Patriots win, or we will be saddled in the next 5 years with so many media conglomerates featuring Patriots one more time, because they're already doing it. It'll happen again, as if we hadn't had enough of Patriots media. We'll talk about that when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios, located at the Golden Nugget Lake Charles. Here's Del Olalea.
Here at the Golden Nugget, I'm in the DraftKings Sportsbook, which you can be. Maybe not for Sunday. I mean, I'm sure this place will be booked up, but you can try. But, of course, we got March Madness coming up. So if you want to spend a weekend, you want to spend that first weekend of the tournament here in Lake Charles, take advantage of all they have to offer here, get that done. DraftKings Sportsbook welcomes you. We have done, well, of course, we're here today. We're here the last couple days, but we were here for our draft, our ESPN 97.5 draft. They had a nice setup for us here. They'll set you up in the same way. You can enjoy all they have to offer, including all the TVs that I'm looking at right now. And it's perfect for March Madness. TVs everywhere can have a different game on every TV. You can make it an all-weekend affair if you so choose. So you can do that here at the DraftKings Sportsbook. Book your spot. Let's move to, well, I can call it the Super Bowl now because I'm not promoing anything. We can move to the Super Bowl. We had a media day, at least the first day of it yesterday, and Roger Goodell had to answer some questions. I'm sure he had hoped at some point that, hey, NFL owners, can you make a couple hires of black coaches so I don't have to answer these questions? They didn't do it. You had the one minority hire, Robert Saleh in Tennessee. He's of Lebanese descent, so the questions were asked of Roger Goodell. And we know that the NFL has tried to do things to encourage owners to hire not only coaches but coordinators. Because if your coordinator gets hired to be a head coach someplace, you get third rounders for it. So they have tried to give them owners incentive, and it didn't work out this hiring cycle. So when you have 10 openings and none go to a black coach, the media is going to ask questions. So here's Roger Goodell at a media day on the lack of diversity in hiring this cycle.
I think we need to continue to make progress, and I believe that. I believe diversity is good for us. I think we have become a more diverse league across every platform, including coaching. But we still have more work to do. There's got to be more steps. So we're reevaluating everything we're doing, including our accelerated program, including every aspect of our policies and our programs, to meet the challenges of today and tomorrow rather than yesterday. So we need to be looking at that and sort of say, okay, why did we have the results this year? What is it that we can be doing in training or education, and that goes for not just the candidates but also the clubs, and how we can try to continue to increase the opportunities and the outcomes ultimately.
He's never going to force an NFL team or NFL teams to hire black coaches, so I don't know that anything changes. The NFL has been trying to push this for a while. They're being sued by Brian Flores currently over this, a lawsuit that continues. When did that lawsuit get filed? Like, we're talking was it going into the 2022 season or after the 2021 season when he got fired? I don't remember exactly, but that lawsuit continues and he keeps winning. Of course, the NFL would like it to go away, but they can't. They can't get it to go away because Flores apparently isn't looking for a settlement, and why would he? The Vikings are going to pay him like $6 million to be their DC, so I don't think he has any reason to settle if he thinks he can win this. So the NFL is dealing with that, and then it happens that 10 openings are there, and it doesn't go to one black coach. Like Brian Flores is like, thank you for that. This only helps my cause even further. So, like, I don't know what the answer is. The Rooney Rule doesn't help. It is simply a hurdle that NFL teams have to get over before they hire the guy they want. And most of those teams, sure, the interview process is fine, but most of those teams have a pretty clear thought on who their guy is, particularly the teams who fire the coach during the season. They kind of back channel and figure out who they want. Like I imagine the Cardinals, even the Cardinals who aren't officially the last team to make a hire because the Raiders have to wait until after the Super Bowl. Even the Cardinals were, at least the reporting was, they really wanted the other LaFleur brother, even though they had three candidates, including Anthony Weaver, the former not only defensive coordinator for the Texans, but I believe he played here as well. Even while he was one of the candidates, they had their eyes on LaFleur. The Raiders have apparently always wanted Kubiak. So these generally the owners and their general managers have a thought, and they get stuck on a guy, and things don't change. I don't know how many times it really plays out that an interview changes the perspective of what an owner wants. And if they want this guy and he happens to be white, they're going to hire that guy. So I don't foresee anything really changing. You can talk about education all you want. Good luck, man, on that. This is going to be a fight he's going to probably have to deal with the entirety of his tenure, however long that is. I don't know if I've come to accept it, but it feels like it is what it is in regards to this. It's been a thing in the NFL since its inception, and no matter what is done. Sean and I were speculating when Roger Goodell said we need to do more. Does it mean more signage in end zones, or is he going to put them on the sidelines? I think they've made a determination, right, of what's going to be in the end zones not in the end zones, but on the white paint behind the end zones for their message. I know they said what it was going to be, but I don't remember it. I think it's some message, whether it's love wins or end racism. I forgot which one it'll be. It's the ones we've seen really since really in the last 3 or 4 years or so. I'll try to find that, but they have determined it. I don't know what he's going to do. I just imagine it's not going to work because the owners have kind of shown who they want to hire and how it goes for the better part of, well, since I've been alive and long before that. So the NFL knows or believes they have a problem, or at least will tell you they have a problem, but they don't really have any real answers other than education as far as the hiring process is concerned. So there that is. The other thing I wanted to get to as far as the Super Bowl is concerned, if the Patriots win another Super Bowl, I think we're really in danger of being inundated with Patriots who are of real no consequence to this Super Bowl potential win being in our lives for years. Because I was getting ready for this show during the John and Lance show and saw Brian Hoyer has a podcast. Brian Hoyer, of course, was on. He appeared to do a hit on Barstool, of course, Boston-centric media company, but Brian Hoyer has a podcast, and he does it with David Andrews. At least David Andrews was a center for the Tom Brady teams, but Brian Hoyer is a Super Bowl champion, of course, because he was on a Tom Brady team. Does that mean that Josh Dobbs, who was the current Patriots backup, am I going to have to deal with him in 6-7 years as a podcaster? I mean, we got to have a standard, right? Like, at least in the NBA, Thanasis has a podcast, but at least his brother is Giannis. Why does Brian Hoyer? Well, I shouldn't say why. You buy a microphone, you grab a camera, you can get a podcast. But I don't want to suffer through. I'm trying to think of a Brendan Schooler podcast in 7 years if he's a Super Bowl champion. Enough of this. This can't go on. I don't have any real love for the Seahawks, but they got to win. And I need like a thumping. I need old school NFC 90s, late 80s, 90s, into the 2000s. Actually, it ended in like 97, I guess, when Elway won. But you get what I'm talking about, where the NFC had that run. I need one of those NFC-type beatdowns where we push this Patriots team to a side, we don't even remember it, and we talk about them like we should. A team that benefited from a soft schedule and all the quarterbacks in the playoffs imploding that they played. That's all. That's all I'm looking for. If this game's over by the time Bad Bunny starts his halftime show, that's what I'm looking for. Like John earlier said, he's looking for a good game. I am not looking for a good game because I know what happens if they win. We don't get rid of him. And Vrabel is fine coach, but these Patriots will be in our lives for another decade if they win. That's the history, right? They win one and they keep winning. Let's cut this off at the knees right now.
Especially if they win with this Mickey Mouse.
Yeah,
Mickey Mouse
because operation. You would think they're only going to get better, right? If they win this one, you think they would just get better. Now, the NFL is certainly different than it was when they started winning, so it's probably a lot harder, and the better quarterbacks are in the AFC, so there are some things in the way. But if they win with this one, it'll be like the Patriots who beat the Rams are kind of similar to this team. Like Brady, I'm not for – forecasting Drake May to become the best quarterback of all time, but that Patriot team won because of the Tuck rule. They went into Pittsburgh and won, and then they wind up beating the Rams in a giant upset, and then we could never get rid of them. Like, if you guys think the Chiefs stuff was bad because you couldn't stand the refs and the Chiefs were always winning, they're not. There's like Nick Wright. There's only like one big-time Chiefs fan in the media. Can you imagine what happens if the Patriots don't go away? We won't hear the end of it. So, for your own benefit, maybe you have some hate for the Seahawks that I don't know about. For your own benefit. There aren't any Seahawks fans in the media besides Brock Heward. let's not have the Patriots win, or we're going to be disgusted. God.
The Brock Heward selfie video on social media.
Yeah, that's all there is. Who's a big Seahawks? Mina Kimes, I guess. Maybe you don't like Mina Kimes, but it's like Heward and Mina Kimes, who for me are inoffensive. They don't offend me at all. If Heward wants to thump his chest, by the way, Brock Heward is suggesting that the Patriots brought the Seattle Seahawks are for sale thing to distract the team.
I saw that.
He's saying blame. So he thinks the team who would do anything to win is trying to distract Leonard Williams and Jackson Smith and Jigba with the potential thought of, hey, our owner might sell the team.
Because you know how
players
much
care about that stuff. Yeah.
Affects JSN's life. A different billionaire owns the Seattle
Seahawks. Different billionaire owns the Seahawks. He's going to be deeply affected by that.
Oh, no. Am I going to get – is my role going to change in the
–
reassigned?
Is a giant contract that's on the way for me not going to happen because a different guy owns the team? But that is it. So, look, there are loonies everywhere, and that's a loony theory by Brock Heward. But it's still not Bill Simmons being in our lives. He's already in our lives. It's not him and Portnoy and all those other guys talking about this another decade of Patriot success. Let's not even tempt fate. Let's crush them. I'm trying to think of a team who had a run, who got beat and never came back. Let's treat them like the Panthers of 2015, right? The Broncos beat them, and Cam won the MVP. I don't think Drake May's winning it. I think it's going to Matt Stafford. But, you know, they had the 1 year, and they haven't been the same since. Let's do that. Let's have that happen, and then we're done with them, right? I mean, Vrabel's a good coach, so we probably won't be done with him. But let's not get it started.
Let's not have him win. You can be a good team for a while, not win a Super Bowl the first year you have
be
this
the
coach.
Yeah, let's not do that. You know, the Texans have been a good team for a while under D'Amico. You know, but they top off at the divisional round. If the Patriots lose this year, they get a first place schedule. They'll still have to deal with Josh Allen, and you know the Mahomes will be back. Hopefully, CJ's better. We'll talk about CJ when we come back, and Lamar and all those things. They got obstacles in the way, but if they get over the hump this year, who knows what this becomes? I'm rooting strongly. I don't know any Bad Bunny songs, but I want to be singing them full with all my chest because the Patriots are down by 3 scores at the half. And I know some of you might turn to an alternate halftime show. I don't even know where you find that thing. It won't be for me. Kid Rock hasn't got me singing any of his songs since like the late 90s. Sorry. Headline any halftime show you want. All right, we'll go to break with that. Let's root on the Seahawks, right? Right.
Yeah, as Ba with the Ba is playing.
Yeah, if you decide to flip over to Ba with the Ba, just comfort yourself with knowing it's 21-3 Seahawks because they've tortured Drake May like a lot of defenses have in these playoffs. All I'm looking for Sam Darnold, don't turn the ball over, and I think the Seahawks got a real shot to win that one by at least 2 scores. All right, we're done with hour one. We'll come back with hour two. We'll tell you what the plans are for C.J. Stroud because you saw he wasn't invited. He's not going to appear tonight. He's not a part of the Pro Bowl games. Now we have a reason why. It's kind of what we guessed, but we'll get to that when we come back.